episode of the Roots Podcast. As always, I am Carter Spires, here with my co-host Matthew Bartlett, the owner and managing editor of The Roots, your premier source for Rice sports news and analysis. Well, we finally get to talk about a win, so that's very exciting.
How about that? We're sending you back out of town.
Yeah. I'm happy to just, if not participating in the preview for a team is what gets it done, I'm happy to just dip out, after we finish up the MTSU review, and then we can
go find my same pair of socks, whatever superstition is left.
But yeah, we'll, as usual, we'll get a little housekeeping stuff and then cover some of the Rice sports news before we get into reviewing the win and then previewing North Texas.
Yeah, it's been a football aside, they're being out of town. It's been a busy week here. So first off, I just want to say thank you to everybody who's been participating either through social media or on the forums and just chatting and having a conversation. And now we're getting to have some positive things to talk about, which is encouraging. So just a thank you from me for what y'all have done and helped build this and the community that we're putting together. And I certainly enjoyed that. If you want to go ahead and support, remember we have the Roost Shop is open now. We'll have some goodies and some giveaways as the year continues. And of course, for our winners of the Pick'em contents that's coming down in the last couple weeks, if you want to pick up something for yourself at the shop, promo code is RiceFight. We'll give you 10% off because we like you so much. So those are things on the Roost front. And then on the Rice front, with football over in Murfreesboro, we had a couple games of note taking place over the weekend here. I wanted to hit on the women's and the men's basketball games in particular. So, man, yeah, a pair of heartbreakers.
Yeah, seriously. Both at home, too, to in-state teams.
So Rice had number 5 Texas A&M on the ropes for the entire game and had the lead with 7.5 seconds left, and A&M got an offensive board and a putback, ended up winning that game by 1. It's a good thing because to some degree we already knew this, that this Rice team was going to be really, really good and capable of playing with an A&M team that's ranked 5th in the nation right now, has probably arguably the best scoring guard in the country. So that's the good news. The bad news is this was the team's chance for that RPI boosting win and that resume padding win I think they were a 13th seed last year because the teams that they beat on their winning streak were not very good. And so this would have been a crown jewel on their resume to say, yeah, we beat everybody we were supposed to, but also look at this. So I know it's way too early to think about March, but from a seeding standpoint, this is the kind of win that could have taken Rice from maybe a double digit seed to an 8-9, for better or worse, we won't really know the impact until it's too late, but that was kind of a bummer, but
Yeah. And it just sort of reduces your margin for error in the hopefully unlikely event that, they get into the conference tournament and just, happen to have a really bad day like they did, earlier in the season against SMU. So you would have liked to have had a win like that to kind of prop up the resume and say, okay, well, even if we didn't win the conference tournament, like we still, we dominated all of these teams in the conference throughout the season and had this big win over a Texas A&M team that was highly ranked at the time. So they just got to go out and do what they did last year, which they're perfectly capable of. So,
yeah, absolutely. And even in that game, Lauren Schwartz, a freshman who started for most of the year, came out. I think she had 19 points, hit 3 or 4 threes in the down the stretch, third and fourth quarter. And they have some young players on this team that can shoot and score, and A&M did all of they could to stop Erica and Nancy from beating them, and that opened up the opportunities for everybody else, and they played really, really well. So I'm optimistic.
And then, yeah, no, it was especially encouraging to see that because the one really big loss they did have from last year was losing Nicole, who was the best shooter on the team. So, you know, getting those freshmen to come in and show that they can kind of loosen up the defense a little bit, because, you know, Nancy and Erica are the two best players on the team, but neither of them are players who are going to do their most damage from outside the arc. So it's good to have the shooting around them to kind of loosen up the paint a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And then one closing thought. Gary Blair is the head coach for the Aggie women's team, and he's a really good guy. And, you know, as with every post-game press conference, there's a good amount of coach speak where most every coach will say, you know, credit the other team. They played well. And some of it is true, and a lot of it is lip service, because that's what you're supposed to say. In his media availability after the game, first thing he asked about was whether or not the Cowboys won. So there's that. And then after they had clarified that the Cowboys did indeed win, they talked about the game. And then he spent probably 2 or 3 minutes, more than just credit to Rice, but 2 to 3 minutes talking about Tina and the incredible job that she's done coaching at Rice and with this program and what she's building. And it went a bit beyond the "we're supposed to say nice things now." And he was pretty glowing in his reviews of how difficult of an out Rice was, and how he thought, you know, Rice could have and maybe should have beaten them at a couple spots. So it was encouraging to hear a coach who has won a national championship say how impressed he was by this program. So anecdotal at best, but pretty encouraging, and, you know, confirming the things that we all saw playing the game. It didn't feel like, you know, a CUSA team playing an SEC team. It felt like two heavyweights just trading blows. So it was fun. The atmosphere in Tudor was incredible.
Yeah. And, you know, on that, like, you know, you listen to coaches talk enough and you can tell, you know, when they're complimenting another team. You get to a point after a while where you can sort of separate when they're just, you know, paying lip service and saying what they're supposed to say, and when they're just sort of, when they actually really mean it. And so I think this is one of those instances where, you know, particularly when that stuff comes unprompted, I think is when you can read a little bit more into it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so good news. Good news in defeat for the women's team, and then shifting over to the men's team, another heartbreaker against crosstown rival Houston. That game went final on Tuesday. I think the final differential had Houston winning by 8 or 9. But this is a game that Rice led by as many as 15 points in the first half. Houston clawed back in the second, and then Rice took it and went ahead and extended it to an 8-point lead. I think they were up 6 with about 5 minutes to play, and just kind of went cold from the free throw line and missed a couple shots. And then Kansas transfer Quentin Grimes had 30 points, 21 after halftime, and was just lights out. And his athleticism was unreal. I was watching this and I'm like, wait, you're telling me there are programs like Kansas that have 5 of these guys on the court at the same time?
Yeah, yeah. This is a guy fair. that was a former 5-star, and by all 3 major recruiting services was a top 15 player in the country in the 2018 recruiting class. So, not exactly a scrub, shall we say?
Rice held them pretty well in check through the first half, and then I think Houston scored 65 points after the break. It went from a slugfest to a shootout pretty quickly, and Rice hung with them. And Drew Peterson said after the game, after Houston had come back, and they took a 4-point lead midway through the second half, he said that last year this Rice team wouldn't have kept fighting. They would have rolled over, and it would have been a 30-point blowout. But they pushed back, took him down to the wire, and again, doesn't count as anything to put on your resume later down the road. But I think sitting at 4-2 after how they opened up the season and playing Houston close enough to beat them and coming up short, I'm more optimistic now than I was about the men's team, which, you know, I thought maybe we'd be able to make a small improvement from last year. And now I'm more optimistic that we're going to be able to get past that 500 mark in conference and really give some teams a scare.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, coming in, I think we had a little bit of optimism about this team that maybe they would continue to make some progress from last year. I think it says good things about this staff and the program that, you know, after all the transfers they lost after Coach Parris' first year, I think people forget that they still improved a lot. Like in 2017-2018, in Parris' first year, they were 7-24, and that was after losing all the transfers they lost after Rhodes left. Well, they improved by 6 wins the next season, last year, after losing a bunch of transfers again. And so, you know, I think that gave you some hope that this year, with the roster finally being a little more stable, that there would be some progress anyway. The last time we got to talk about this team, they were coming off their first game against what is now looking like it's going to be a pretty good Arkansas team. And that was a bit of an ugly result. And, you know, they had lost an exhibition before the season. But, you know, even though the competition outside of Houston has not exactly been a murderer's row since then, I think you feel pretty good about 4-2 this far into the season. You know, that Penn team they beat, beat my other team in their first game of the season. That's also a Penn team that they played last year and lost by, what, 16 points?
Something like that on the road.
Yeah, and I don't think Penn lost much from last year to this year. I saw a little bit about them before they were playing Alabama. So, I think this is, through 6 games, you know, with the results that they've had, the opener against Arkansas aside, maybe, you know, even after this one, when, you know, they were that close and just kind of went cold down the stretch, I think you feel pretty good about where they are.
Yeah, I mean, all told, what I have seen on the court from this team is, last year I remember watching and seeing a bunch of freshmen making freshman mistakes, like passing the ball to somebody with a foot on the end line and turning it over, or making poor decisions with the basketball, not attacking every offensive board. Things that you can correct with coaching, and they haven't been perfect in those respects this year, but that they are more consistent in doing the right things and playing together and being able to rely on different guys and not just say Ako Adams go do everything. Like, they have Trey Murphy and Robert Martin and Peyton Moore and Max Fiedler, freshman, has been really good inside early. It's a lot of different players stepping up and making plays. So encouraging. And
they've got some real diversity in terms of depth. Because like all 5 starters had at least 10 points against Houston, which is really nice to see. And, you know, Trey Murphy was kind of hot and got them going to the beginning of it. And then, you know, Drew Peterson got a little hot after they came out in the second half and was hitting some 3-pointers, ended up 4 of 5 on the day. The whole team was 42% from 3, which is really encouraging. And then it was Robert Martin that ended up actually being the leading scorer. So, you know, seeing all those different guys contributing and kind of, you know, being able to share the load and, you know, take over when one guy, you know, drops off a little bit, another guy can get hot. That's really one of the things that can sustain you, as opposed to, you know, really relying on one guy to sort of carry you.
Yeah. So even with those losses, a good start from both the basketball teams. And then wanted to mention as well, if you are going to be around this weekend, there will be football. Rice will be, of course, doing senior day. against North Texas, and we'll jump into that in just 1 second. And volleyball is hosting the Conference USA tournament this weekend. Rice will tip off. Tip off, set off. What is the appropriate begin a volleyball game? Serve off?
I don't know, actually.
The game will commence.
Yeah.
Against UTEP. That game is scheduled for Friday at 5 p.m. So play Friday, Saturday, and hopefully get a rematch against Western Kentucky on Sunday. So that'll be going on through the weekend. But of course, the main focus that we're here today is to recap the first Rice football win of 2019 and the first road win of the Mike Bloomgren era.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was fun. You know, they got out in the first half in particular, the first, quarter plus, I guess you would say. It took them a little while to get going on offense, maybe. You know, they kicked a field goal early, and then it wasn't till late, like maybe 2 minutes left in the first quarter, that they got the first touchdown. But the defense for that stretch looked as good as ever, even, you know, if they had some breakdowns later in the game, maybe. But during that stretch of the first half where, you know, they got the first two touchdowns to Rosner and were up 17-0. That's definitely as good as you felt about this team all year, for sure.
Yeah, well, they hadn't led by 10-0. So they got the 7-0 lead.
What was the largest,
or the 3-0 lead?
What was the largest was lead of the season?
Lead of the season was 7. They'd gone down and they'd scored opening touchdowns. Was it Southern Miss? I think there was 2 games where they'd opened up with a touchdown first. That were at the time the largest leads of the season. So they got the 3-0 lead, then they got the 10-0 lead, which was the largest of the season, and then they went back and piled on. And that was the point where you were kind of, I mean, so full transparency, when two weeks ago when we did the post Marshall podcast, we kind of broke it down and we said we haven't seen this offense operate to the level it had until at its highest level until Giovanni Johnson got under center and was in the game, and we both touted him and felt pretty confident that this kind of offensive production was only going to be possible with him at quarterback, and Tom did not look good at all against Marshall. And granted, that was with a bad back, and, you know, maybe give him the benefit of the doubt. And then he comes out against Middle and 18 of 23, 3 touchdowns. He was as good as you could have possibly asked for.
Yeah, 82.6 total QBR, 9.7 yards per attempt is I'm not sure we've seen a Rice quarterback performance this season that even approaches that. Certainly not in like full starter level volume. So credit to Tom for coming out and shutting us up.
Yeah, it was fun to watch, because it got to the point where, and Tom even said after this game, we were asking about, so at what point did you figure out that all you had to do on offense was throw it really high and far, and Brad Rosner was going to run up under it? And he said, well, you know, once we figured that on the first touchdown, you know, we noticed they kept single covering him, and fool me once, shame on me, and fool me twice. And to their credit, Rice saw a weakness in the defense. And by the time Middle was able to correct that, it was too far gone.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, like, on the whole, it's not like he was, you know, out there just, like, driving dimes into tight coverage and, you know, making these crazy anticipatory throws and, you know, doing all this insane stuff. He just went out there and made the plays that were available to play. Like, it's not like any of the throws on the touchdowns to Brad were, like, incredible, amazing throws. He just put the ball in a position where his receiver could make a play. which is kind of what we had needed all year from a quarterback in this offense and what we had only gotten in, you know, little small bursts, you know, like Wiley a little bit at the very beginning of the Wake Forest game and, you know, Giovanni at times during his one start against Marshall, and Tom himself had done it for, you know, a series or two at a time. But it was good to finally get that, like, and, you know, it's but what we've been saying all year, like, these guys, they haven't needed them to be anything special, like, you know, long term in terms of what you want from quarterbacking in this offense. Like, you'd like to see an elevation of the overall level of play, and hopefully we'll get that at some point. But, you know, what they needed this year with the defense playing as well as it has most of the time is just make the plays that are there, you know, like, don't miss an open receiver. Don't hold on the ball too long and take a sack. Don't fumble the snap, or you know, just make the play that's there and take what you can get. And that was all they needed. And it was great to see that, you know, they finally got that performance from start to finish from a quarterback, and it led to a win.
Yeah, and no turnovers. Andrew Bird actually had his first interception of the season right before halftime. Tom was sacked just twice and 5 incomplete passes. If you're just looking at it, I think the only thing as far as shooting themselves in the foot and making those bad plays, the first Middle Tennessee touchdown drive, this was so Rice had gone up by 17 and we're midway through the second quarter, Rice gets a 3-and-out and gets flagged for, I don't remember if it was defensive holding in the secondary or pass interference or something like that.
Yeah, it was holding.
It was holding. And
holding
then Rice,
on Treshawn.
Yeah, well, the first one. And then Rice proceeds to get 2 more third down stops on the same drive, both awarded first downs to Middle on penalty. Then proceeds to get a 4th down stop, penalty in the end zone, and Middle converts their first touchdown. That was the drive. At that point, it was 17-0. Rice should have been off the field 4 times. That it kind of felt like, shoot, Rice can put this away before halftime. And then they almost did. But and that was really, those poorly timed penalties were really the worst thing that happened to Rice. As far as execution.
Yeah. And, you know, well, I would say a credit to what they've done kind of all year. And they showed it at the end of that first that, you know, they gave up that drive with all those frustrating penalties. And then they went 3-and-out. And then they gave up a 1-play 90-yard touchdown drive. And at that point, the, you know, what had been a 17-0 lead was suddenly just a 3-point lead. Well, the 4 possessions after that to close out the half, touchdown for Rice, 3-and-out for MTSU, touchdown for Rice, interception. And that, you know, that gets you to 31-14. You're suddenly up 17 again. And, you know, with the way the second half went, that ends up being the difference in the game. So that stretch, probably as much as anything, was what won the game for Rice. And that was, you know, a really nice moment for them not to like to get too frustrated or down and let you know we've just almost blown this 17-point lead. And it's just a credit to and another example of the resilience they've shown all year. Like, you know, how many teams after starting 0-9 are still going to have the resilience to shake back and win a game like this? So it's not a surprise given the way we've seen them handle themselves all year, but that was a really nice sequence, I thought, those last 4 possessions of the half.
Yeah, and I think what was most impressive there is, so Middle punches back, and it is a 1-score game, and Rice doesn't do anything fancy. Like, there was no change in strategy or philosophy. That the touchdown drive that they had right after that was capped off by, I think, and you highlighted this in the film room, Carter, wasn't exactly the same power toss play that Aston Walter has scored on from 30 yards out like 100 times this season, but it was a pretty similar concept.
A similar play, yeah, for sure.
That Rice is put on film so many times with Aston from about 30 to 40 yards out.
Well, and out of that same formation too, they love to do that 22 personnel with the two tight ends on one side, and you know, just run a toss play to that side, and
we're available as offense or defensive consultants if anybody just needs us to watch, and we will, if they run the same play 10 times for a touchdown, we'll let you know. I mean, that really, like, we were sitting there 30 like, yards out. I'm like, it's either they're going to toss it up to Rosner or they're going to run that power toss, which the toss up to Rosner was a 34 yarder, which is how they ended the last drive before halftime.
Yeah. Free advice to Seth Luttrell. If you want to, you know, hire me for, you know, to be a defensive analyst, I will happily tell you Rice is going to run those two plays. Now give me a job.
About to say, you get the job, you get paid, and North Texas, so far, nobody else has been able to stop it.
Yeah.
Or at least it's gone for a touchdown before they figured it out. And so that was nice to see. And then I think something that I noted while watching this sequence was when Rice took over on that last drive to Rosner, with the touchdown before halftime. So they took over, and there was about roughly 3 minutes left on the clock. And Rice was aggressive getting the ball down the field, and they were playing to get points on the board. And I don't know if we'd seen that before halftime. Unfortunately, before halftime, Rice's opponents have scored more often than Rice has. And this was probably one of the first times that I can remember that Rice closed out a half, not just settling for a long field goal, but driving the length of the field and attacking the end zone. And especially after you'd already found that mismatch, being aggressive and going for it and being willing to take that chance, I think there was a huge momentum shift and a huge change in how you play the second half from a 31-14 deficit at halftime to a 14-24.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that's honestly, it's one of my biggest pet peeves as a football fan, is when coaches get the ball near the end of the first half, and you know, especially if you've got a lead, and you get the ball coming out. And so many coaches in that instance are like, well, you know, we're ahead, we've got the ball, and we'll just kind of go into a shell and let the half run out. So I love to see that aggression from them to go down and say, you know, we want to put more points on the board. We're you know, we've got some momentum here offensively for, you know, one of the first times all year, and we're not going to let it go. You know, it's like a 2-for-1 in basketball. You know, you're the end of the quarter or the half, and you've got, you know, what, you know, in college, I guess, what, like 36 seconds on the shot clock or something.
And
you
want to go down. I was told there would be no math.
Well, at first I was going to say like 30 seconds on the shot clock, but that's because I'm used to watching the teams do this in the NBA. And I was like, wait, no, not the shot clock is different. But yeah, you know,
but the same analogy,
right? You've got the chance to, if you get a shot up quick, you can force the other team to give you another possession before the buzzer. And so I think more football coaches should look to take that same opportunity. And it was really, really nice to see them be aggressive and go for that in this one.
Yeah. And then you go into a game at halftime, and the real question that we've asked, you know, 9 weeks, well, I guess bye weeks included, 11 weeks running, was, we know this team is capable of playing at a high level. Can they finish? And I don't know what they did differently in the second half, but they scored 0 points, but they won the game. I will take it.
You know, they went in protecting a 17-point lead. They allowed 14 points, and the offense was not good after halftime. But when they absolutely had to at the very end of the game, they made a play.
Yeah, and I think at least I look back at it a little bit, and there was a couple elements of Rice being okay with falling back on the running game. And I'm not going to, I don't think they necessarily went into a kill the clock mentality or anything like that early, but there was a couple series where, and we've seen this in other or other games when Rice has had a lead, the first drive after halftime, 4 yard run by Aston, 4 yard run by Aston, incomplete pass. And that's a three and out that Rice and Chris Barnes booms a punt down to the six where it's fair caught. And that's one of those things that like that's not like, as far as Rice's offensive philosophy and getting to a third and short and having a chance for a first down, like there's nothing about how Rice started the half that was all that bad or all that different, or you would feel uncomfortable with. Like Rice would probably call a similar set the same way. And then the same kind of thing happened the next time that got the ball in the third quarter and, you know, had a penalty and ended up just short of the sticks on third down after, you know, that was where they had to start on their own 1 yard line and kind of had to punt out of their own end zone to survive. And in between those, credit to Middle, they were able to go on, you know, some long extended drives. And so I don't think this was necessarily a situation where Rice got out to the big lead after halftime and froze. I think credit to Middle, they got put Rice in some challenging situations, and Rice didn't make one or two plays, and Middle fought back to stay in this game. Because if Middle doesn't make that stop right around halftime and Rice goes and scores, then it is probably over.
Yeah, and, you know, it's, I don't know. It's just one of those things where, you know, we can sit here and say, oh, you know, they really should have been more aggressive, maybe throw on first down some more in the second half, you know, focus on really scoring more rather than just kind of, you know, getting long possessions to chew up the clock and stuff like that. But, you know, like you said, it's, you know, there's just kind of an instance here, an instance there where, you know, if Rice makes one play and converts a third down, then, you know, a three and out turns into like a 5 minute drive to where, you know, Middle isn't even close enough to get that final drive, to, you know, get that last chance at the end. So, you know, I think for me personally, I would like them to see them come out with a bit more of an aggressive philosophy with a lead like that, because, you know, what ultimately wins you game when the game is points. So, you know, I think unless you're a lead is never as big as you think it is. So
Rice can attest to that.
Yeah. So, but you know, it doesn't have to be a wholesale, like, you don't have to come out in the air raid in the second half trying to, you know, run 50 plays. So.
Yeah. Which actually, I think that brings us to, I thought the last drive of this game for Rice, I mean, almost gave me a cardiac arrest, and I was pacing and jumping. And so they take over with 3.5 minutes left in the game. And, you know, we're talking about being aggressive and going downfield. The first play they run with a 3 point lead with 3 minutes to go is a pass that falls incomplete. And so at that point, you know, it's really easy to sit back as someone, you know, on there doing the couch analysis of, well, you need to be more aggressive, but then the pass doesn't get completed and you're like, why were you throwing the ball in that situation? So it's really easy to do that kind of revisionist history, but in this case it worked, and that set up what you could arguably say was the biggest play of the Owls season so far. It's 3rd and 11 and the clock is ticking down and you're right at like a minute and a half, and Middle has, I think, a couple timeouts left, and Rice has a decision to make on 3rd and 11. Do you run the ball, force Middle to take a timeout and kick the ball back to them with 1 minute and make them drive the length of the field, which I know in the back of my mind when this is happening is I watched Louisiana Tech do that, and I watched Baylor do that before half, and I watched UTSA do that in the fourth quarter. It was too many instances where I'm just like, I don't know if you want to call a run and present yourself that opportunity, or do you throw it and then you're putting yourself, if you don't get it, and not only did they have a minute and a half, but they have more, they have timeouts to work with. And then sixth-year senior Aston Walter has the run of his life, which spectacular, on third and 11, picks up 24.
Yeah, that was, you can read about this play in the film room. Obviously, it wasn't hard to pick this one as one of the ones to break down. This was not, you know, they've done a little, it was out of a shotgun two-back set, which they've done a fair amount of in the last couple weeks. The running play was outside zone, which is a really interesting thing, both because Rice has not run outside zone, at least as far as I recall, very much this season. And outside zone out of a shotgun two-back set is not really normal, because you don't normally have a lead blocker with outside zone. It's not weird. It's not like a complicated or a totally new type of thing, but it's not something you see a whole lot of. And the play was just, you know, the edge defender got upfield a little bit right at the start, and Charlie Booker, who was the other back, didn't get there quite enough. And it, not that he was slow, by the time he got there, the edge was already kind of sealed upfield. And, you know, outside zone is a play where basically the whole offense is going to flow to one side of the field, and the running back is kind of going to kind of run parallel to the sideline or perpendicular to the sideline behind him. And he's just going to basically wait for a crease to open up. And in Austin's case, he gets the ball and the edge is already kind of sealing in front of him. And the hole is opening up, and it's not a big one, but it's basically like if you were to freeze frame that play, he's getting the ball, eyes toward the sideline, and there's a small hole opening up basically like 90 degrees. Like it must have been at the very edge of his peripheral vision. And he gets the ball, he plants his foot, and just, it's the best cut I think I've ever seen him make. Just immediately rotates his whole body and explodes upfield through that hole. And it was one of the best runs I have ever seen him make. It was absolutely fabulous. And I give so much credit to him. Jager Bull got a key block on that play. He was split out wide and managed to block one of the safeties, who was one of the only guys who could have made that that tackle maybe like a yard short of the sticks. But I give just about all of the credit on that play to Aston Walter. That was a really, really incredible bit of running by him, both in terms of the vision it took to see that hole opening up when it did, where it did, and then to make that cut and accelerate as quickly as he did, you know, in terms of both the mental and sort of the skill side of that, and then the physical side of being able to make the cut and get upfield that fast. It's just so, so impressive. So all the credit in the world to him on that play. It was stellar.
Yeah, and I think that was like, Blomgren always preaches process, process, process. And what we saw on that play was the distilled version of what intensity and physicality and style of play Mike Blomgren wants to bring to Rice, because like you hit on several of those, like Jaeger needs to make that block downfield. Charlie Booker had a block on that play to open somebody out. And Brian Chafin and Justin Gooseberry, two of the grad transfers that came in for this year on the line, both made blocks that opened up and set that hole for Aston to run through. And it's one of those things that I don't know what Middle could have done differently, short of stacking eight guys inside the box, which you probably aren't going to do on third and 11, just about any situation. Like, that was a play that if everybody did what they were supposed to do, it was going to work. And it worked. And you're on the last seconds of the play clock or the game clock, you need to pick up one more first down on the ground and run out the clock. And they did it. And I think we've seen Rice over the past couple weeks kind of open up the offense a little bit and slim it down and go to more of a more of the traditional spread and that single back. You know, they haven't gotten away and gone completely removed like the two tight end to fullback packages and things like that. There's still a lot of the traditional base of what they want to build on, but we've shown them branch out. But I thought it was pretty telling that, you know, they were able to get those touchdowns to Rosner out of a couple different formations. But then when it came time to, we need one play to win the game, what are we going to call? And it was out of, you know, Mike Bloomgren's bread and butter and salted up the game and ended up still having to punt on that drive, but punted it back to middle with no timeouts with, I think 19 seconds left on the clock, and they had to drive the length of the field, which is pretty darn hard to do, and gave me a heart attack.
A little scarier than it should have been, but you know, it's you know, they were still well short of the end zone when the final tackle was made. So
yeah, well, credit fine. Coach Stockstill with that, because so there's 19 seconds left, and I think everybody watching in the stadium and elsewhere was like, oh, this is where you throw like a 10-yard pass so you can throw a Hail Mary from, like, I think they started on, right, on the 25. This is not where you immediately break into the schoolyard play. And immediately they throw the pass and they do the lateral. And you see the entire Rice defense has caved into the middle to kind of look out for that short route. And you see guys running free. And I think a really, really smart coaching decision.
Yeah.
Because
a really bold call, but a smart one.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's smart if it works. It didn't work. but yeah, that Bloomgren said after the game that was the only time of the game that he was happy to see laundry laying on the field when they threw that. Of course, that play ended with a forward pass. That I don't even know who recovered or what happened, but as soon as I threw that ball forward, that ball got thrown forward and that flag went flying, you just saw the entire sideline erupt because they knew what that meant, that this was finally over.
Yeah, like when the ball doesn't go 10 yards on a last ditch onside attempt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great. And then so we've talked a lot about the offense. Want to transition a little bit to the defense and coming into this game, I guess in the preview before I had mentioned that, you know, Asher O'Hara is a dual threat guy, but he's going to run first and he's going to be dangerous on the ground. And Rice did a phenomenal job defending O'Hara all day. And middle as a whole came into the game as the number one rushing offense in Conference USA, averaging somewhere around, I think it was like 230 yards per game on the ground. They got to 120 against Rice. They had little to no success running the football. And of their passing yards, they got, you know, 30% of them on one breakaway play with busted coverage. So Rice gave up some yards on this play, on this game, but really what middle wanted to do, they took away. And that was pretty impressive.
Yeah. And this, mind you, with no sacks, you know, the pass rush wasn't as good as you would like to see maybe, but with no sacks, O'Hara had 19 carries for 65 yards. So that's, you know, barely over 3 yards a carry. And then one of those was a 17-yard run, so the other 18 carries went for 48 yards. So that's, you know, barely what, like 2.5 yards an attempt. So
yeah, he was nothing.
Everyone else on the team combined looks like 11 carries for 30, like 40 yards. So yeah. When the number one rushing offense in the conference comes in and and you hold them to less than 4 yards a carry on 30 carries, that'll do. That'll do just fine.
Yeah, and there was a part of that that, you know, Rice did have a two-touchdown lead for the majority of this game, and especially down the stretch in the second half. So there's an element where, yeah, Middle's going to throw more than run just because of the game script, but it wasn't like this was a blow. The greatest lead was 17 points. Middle got it down to 10. This was a close enough game throughout most of the second half that, you know, Middle was pretty script open to run whatever they wanted to. And if they had so chosen in the middle of the third quarter after they scored that touchdown to try and keep it on the ground and score, like, they had like 20 minutes left in the game. They had more than enough time to get two drives and scoring drives. So this wasn't just Rice was winning the whole time, so of course they didn't run. No, this was Middle not being able to do what they were best at and having to improvise.
You know, not at all a game where like the game state was really affecting the run pass ratio for Middle of them. Not that circumstance at all. And what, you know, even if you would try to say that there was a little bit of that, at the beginning of the game, before, you know, it was what, at the end of the, I mean, at the end of the first quarter, like with 2 minutes left in the first quarter, it was 3-0. And I mean, how many rushing yards did they have at that point? Like, it was not as though this was
hardly any at all.
Yeah. So, a really, you know, Rice has been, we've complimented the rushing defense all year long, but this was, I would say, one of their better performances all year. It was really nice, and even if you didn't always get the results you would want in the secondary, you know,
it was 15, by the way, 15 rushing yards in the first quarter for Middle on 7 carries.
That'll do just fine.
So they were averaging 2 yards a game out of the gate from their bread and butter.
And you know, this is not. I am full on the analytics train of pass more, pass more, pass more in a lot of ways as a sort of football philosophy, but this is Conference USA. This is not the NFL. Rushing defense is important, and if you can shut down the run to that degree, it's going to do a lot of good things for you. So just continue to really be impressed by the efforts this defense is putting up, especially against the run.
Yeah, I mean, the defensive line was phenomenal, and I wanted to Antonio Montero, he had one of his best games, I think, as a Rice Owl. Like, he was huge in some of the tackles that he was making, and, you know, playing alongside in this game Blaze Aldridge. So I think Blaze and Montero both tied at the top for leaders with 7 tackles, but Blaze ended up, he got 2 half tackles for a loss in this game, which 2 halves make 1 whole, and that 1 whole tied him with Larry Izzo for most tackles for a loss in a single season in Rice history at 17, which is pretty darn impressive.
Not bad. And, not bad. And hey, and you can't right. And, you know, some people will point out when you bring up records like that they play more games now than they used to. Well, they didn't play fewer than 10 games back then. So, you know, you can't say Blaze has taken advantage of the extra games in the schedule. He will when he breaks that record, but tying it in 10 games is it's pretty impressive work.
Yeah, well, I think this is the 8th consecutive game where he's had at least 1 tackle for a loss. Eighth, or it might have been 8th coming in. This might have been the 9th. I lose track. This, I mean, I've made my fair share of bad predictions or calls, even on this a lot of podcasts, and shoot, everything I wrote in the through fall camp about this team, you know, I'm sure 10% of it was somewhat accurate. I like to think it was better than that. There was some good and some bad, but, you know, Blaze was the guy that I said, this is a guy that nobody's talking about that's going to be one of the best players in the conference. And I think to this point, it's hard to argue that he hasn't lived up to that mantle. Like, he's been incredible. And his quickness sideline to sideline and the ability that he has to be in on every play is one of the reason that Rice has been in these games. He's been that dominant of a defensive player.
Yeah, a pretty easy pick for us in the previews for a defensive MVP for this team, and it looks like we'll get to the end of this season with him being a pretty solid pick.
I don't remember. Did you get the first pick and get him, or did
Yeah.
I'll give you the victory. I don't even.
If we had done it separately, I think we could say he probably would have been the consensus pick.
All right, next year I get Blaze. On dibs and then November.
So yeah, you get to pick first next year.
There you go. A heck of a game by him, and just really the Rice defense, I think, played pretty well. One other guy that I was really excited about coming into the year wrote a little bit about Trayshawn DeBones. Man, this is a guy who, you know, because of all the red tape involved around the walk-on programs and how that works and scholarships and the NCAA, which is everybody's favorite right now. Essentially, Rice had to put him on scholarship to get him on the field this year, even though he walked onto the team. And, you know, it's literally a financial commitment, and you only have so many of those to hand out. So football coaches tend to be pretty choosy when it comes to who they're putting on scholarship. And they made the decision, this guy's too important. We need to get him on scholarship. We want him on the field. And the only game he's missed so far this year, he literally had the flu and couldn't get out of bed. So whenever he's been standing on 2 feet, he's been a difference maker. And the first play of this game, Asher O'Hara hits his receiver on a slant, and who's there but Trayshawn DeBones. And not only does he make the tackle, but he forces a fumble on the very first play from scrimmage, and Rice recovers. And I think that pretty much set the tone of for the team for the entire game.
Yeah, it's you know, we've sort of made this point earlier in the year that, you know, last year with, you know, it being the first year and the roster turnover and the way things were with the depth and all that, Rice is playing a lot of true freshmen just because they had to and they didn't have other guys. And that was just the way things were. And it was nice to get to this season and be able to have it to where if guys were playing as freshmen, it was because they had really earned it. And he is absolutely one of those guys. And so it's really nice to see when you're in the position where you actually have depth and you don't need these freshmen to come in and play just because you need a body there. For a guy to come in and, you know, make so much noise as a freshman walk on that you have to put him on scholarship and then, you know, earn his way into some playing time and to play so well when he does. And, you know, it makes you feel pretty good about the future of the program.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting. And then one more freshman sighting. So Zane Knipe was a guy that we kind of talked up in the preseason and mentioned a little bit. He's been kind of just nursing some nagging injuries during the season. And so he didn't ever really fall off the radar, but wasn't available on Saturdays to really make a difference. So gotten a little bit to a game. I think it was the UTSA. Was it UTSA? No, it was a home game. It was Southern Miss, I believe. I think he got a Southern Miss or Marshall, played a snap or two, but got his first college carry this weekend and took it 13 yards on an end around. And he gets going fast when he has the football. And yeah, I have seen him rep that play in practice literally 100 times over the past 3 months. And
yeah. And I was watching that play and I wasn't like focused on the screen right at the beginning of that play. And so I turned after he'd already gotten the ball, and he didn't have a great angle, like to get to the sideline on that one. And I saw him get the ball and then start to accelerate around the corner. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Who is that? Is that? And then like, as the play was, I was like, is that Zane? That's probably Zane. Right. And then it turned out to be him. And I was like, yeah, I don't think I had seen anybody else on this team move like that. So,
no, not even, you know, not even close.
If that's his second game, you know, then as long as he's still healthy, they can get him into both of the remaining ones this season and still keep that red shirt. So, yeah, anytime you can add a guy with
an intended red shirt. So,
right. So, you know, anytime you can add speed like that to your offense, you know, whenever you can get an opportunity to get a guy like that the ball, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it all worked out. I mean, we're at the point where it's all smiles. Like, there were things to fix and things to tweak, but by and large, this week we get to we've talked about all the things that need to be fixed. I don't think there was anything really in this game that we saw from the concerns standpoint that we hadn't pointed out as something that was already, you know, something that needed to be addressed. There wasn't anything new that reared its head. I think finally we just kind of saw the culmination of all of the good things that had come together, really just all these separate pockets of success kind of falling in concert and working out to a win. So it was exciting, and I thought this was interesting. So during the bye week, Rex Ryan came in and he talked with the team, of course, known Blomgren from his time with the Jets, and Rex gave the team an ultimatum. And he said, go win these last three games. And, you know, there was some rah-rah and some pop-ups. And, it's kind of what you would expect somebody to say to some degree. But the team really took it to heart. And, like, listening to Naeem Smith talk about that conversation and talk about the impact of getting to meet Rex and listen to him and learn from one of the – I mean, he's an incredible defensive mind. That was really cool for them, and to see them come out and check that box. And of course, they have to win two more to get to three, and it took them nine games to get to one. So we're not going to get ahead of ourselves and anoint them a three-win team yet. But pretty encouraging, and it puts you to the point where, you know, I guess if we transition into North Texas, that this is a team that, you know, like, they beat Middle on the road, like, they can beat North Texas.
Yeah, I think that's a good transition to talking about North Texas, a team that has certainly not had the year that they would have wanted. I mean, losses to SMU and Cal and Houston are all pretty excusable. But,
well, in that Houston game, that was the week that we had the De'Ara King redshirt situation.
Yeah,
where,
yeah, that was a weird time.
Houston was the favorite in that game, and then all of a sudden De'Ara is not going to play, and he's going to redshirt, and feels like half the team is running for the hills, and then North Texas becomes, the line swung like a significant margin to where North Texas was now the favorite, and then Houston came out and they just blew them off. They won by like 30 points. It was one of the most bizarre like 3-day periods like college football's had, and it's a weird sport.
Yeah. But you know, they against two other contenders in the West got blown out 45-27 to Southern Miss, and just not last week, it was 2 weeks ago, they were on a bye, but and with the caveat that Mason Fine got knocked out with a concussion, the same Louisiana Tech team that Rice took to overtime just blasted them. The final was 52-17, and it wasn't even that close. It was 45-3 with like 8 minutes left or something, like halfway through the fourth quarter, and North Texas put up two garbage time touchdowns. Yeah, it was not pretty. And you know, they're like, Mason Fine has maybe not been as good as we kind of hyped him up to be in the preseason. I think he's been banged up, right?
I think it's the second game of the season, and he has had a concussion issue. He had his non-throwing shoulder banged up pretty early. I think he's had at some point some sort of ankle or lower body injury. Like he's playing at 30-40%, which, I mean, we saw Tom Stewart come out in the Marshall game and play at less than 100%, and that was really not good. And we saw the same guy come out and throw 3 touchdowns and complete 18 to 23 passes. So I think the difference between, you know, I don't think it's going too far out of turn to say that Mason Fine is a better quarterback than Tom Stewart at their apex.
I think that's probably fair, yeah.
Mason Fine's one of the best quarterbacks in Conference USA history. But a not healthy Mason Fine, this team is really been a shell of what we expected them to be. I mean, this was a team that was picked second year in a row to win Conference USA, and they have to win out to make a bowl game or to qualify for a bowl game. That's not to say that, you know, if a team gets left out, like a 6-6 North Texas team with a Mason Fine that's sitting out to not get injured before he goes to the NFL, like, if somebody's getting laid out, like, you know, like, it's not even a guarantee at that point.
At, you know, this is COSA, like 6-6. Like, if you're 6-6, like a 6-6 COSA team is one of the teams that's on the chopping block if there are too many bowl eligible teams. So
yeah, it happened to UTSA like 2 years ago, like pretty recently.
Yeah,
and maybe was Southern Miss a couple years ago. It's more than once it's happened to a COSA team. So yeah, North Texas, like, they've been hurting.
Yeah. But, you know, even, even with Fine as banged up as he's been, I think the disappointment for them has probably been the defense more than anything. I mean, they give up 31 points to Abilene Christian in the season opener, lost to Charlotte 39-38. And Charlotte's probably better than we expected. I think they're on the verge of bowl eligibility, but, you know, giving up 52 and 45 to, you know, the two top COSA West teams they played in Southern Miss and Louisiana Tech. It's fair to say that this is probably an offense first conference on the whole. But that's not going to get it done in those big games. So,
we knew this about North Texas coming into the year. We knew North Texas was going to be a team that was going to try and outscore you and get just enough stops, maybe 2 or 3 stops on defense to win a game. They were never going to be like Rice has gotten to the point in some games where they could have won games where they scored 17 points this year. Like, they could have scored 15 and beaten Army. Like, North Texas was never going to win a game with 2 touchdowns. They were going to win all of their games, you know, 45-27 or something like that. So as soon as the offense kind of started to slow down a little bit, the defense was not there to pick up the slack. And that's what we've seen. I mean, the fewest points that they've allowed to a team not named UTSA was 30 to Middle. Granted, they did beat Middle, but, you know, it's been a rough year on defense, and it's the kind of thing that, you know, you entering the year, this was a game that you weren't really quite sure about, because, you know, last year Rice went up to Denton and Rice was trailing 20-17 in the fourth quarter, and this was with Wiley Green making his first ever start as a college quarterback. He'd come in the game before that, I think it was on the road at FIU, and was not ready, and came out of that, and there was a fumbled snap, and then North Texas had like an 80-yard touchdown drive or something, and that game ended up being a blowout by the final score. But if Rice doesn't turn the ball over and they don't have a true freshman quarterback playing in his first ever start on the road, Rice could have won last year with a healthy Mason Fine, because the Rice defensive line last year beat him up. Like, he almost got knocked out of that game.
Yeah. And so, you know, and this is one that you know, common opponents, transitive property is never never exactly what you want to go off in football. It can be misleading at times, but you know, those Southern Miss and Louisiana Tech teams that put up 45 and 52 on this team, Rice held those teams to 20 and 17 points in regulation. And yeah, so
I will, the caveat I'll give in this, that is as beat up as Mason Fine is, the North Texas offense and what we've seen Rice be susceptible to, maybe a little bit more in years past than this year, but that big play and Jalen Darden, the wide receiver, junior wide receiver, he usually lines up in the slot. He's a playmaker and can get behind linebackers, and if he can get the ball in space, it's one of those things where Mason Fine doesn't have to throw it 70 yards down the field. He can throw a 7-yard slant and he can break a tackle. So he's a guy that Rice needs to be disciplined with. They did a decent job against Middle on Ty Lee, but he still had that big touchdown that kept Middle in the game. And then Trey Siggers at the running back position, he's been kind of guy that they like to get involved and run their offense through along with Fine. So it's not just like there are teams where it is a quarterback and nobody else. Like North Texas has several guys that can be dangerous and will make Rice work on defense. This is not going to be a game where, you know, versus Middle, we really felt like if you could shut down the running game and O'Hara, then they were done. I think if you can get to Fine, but you got to be covering all your bases. Like, this is still a pretty good North Texas offense, all things considered.
Right. And you mentioned Darden, but like, he's of their, you know, primary wide receivers, he actually has the lowest average yards per catch.
Which is probably a scary thing because he might be their best playmaker.
Yeah. And I hope I'm pronouncing this right, but Jair, it's J-Y-A-I-R-E. Jair Shorter averages 21 yards a catch, has over 400 yards on just 20 catches on the year. And then Michael Lawrence is averaging 13.5 yards a catch on 43 receptions. You know, and the two of them have 11 touchdowns combined, which is as many as Darden does. So, this is not even going to be a circumstance where, you know, it's not going to be against like Marshall where, you know, as good as all those tight ends were, where you're at least trying to cover a lot of tight ends down the field instead of a lot of fast wide receivers. So you know, you're hoping they're not going to get over the top of you, but, North Texas has a you know, at least a trio of pretty good wide receivers. And then they've got two other wide receivers and a tight end that have at least 14 catches. So, Fine will spread the ball around. He's got the playmakers to get it to. So this is, you know, it's not even a scenario where you play cover six and bracket one guy, and then you know you can worry a little less about the other ones. You know, like, you know, if you give this guy an opening, he's got the guys he can get it to, and they'll make big plays over the top. You know, they'll hit the short stuff and bust it past you. So they're going to have to be really, really disciplined on the back end to you know, keep from getting big plays hit against them in this one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will, so caveat, like midweek we're recording this right now, so this is not the NFL and teams are not required to release an injury report of who's practicing and how much and who's going to play on Saturday. The folks I've talked to at North Texas and who cover the team right now say they think Mason Fine is probably going to get the go. But no one has been, no one's felt confident to say, yeah, he's the guy. So I think right now, like you're probably expecting to see Fine come out and be the first guy on the field. But yeah, I mean, it could be Jason Bean, redshirt freshman who's played in a couple games this year, or yeah. I'm going to butcher this pronunciation, Austin Aoun, A-U-N-E.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out that one. Aoun? I have no idea.
We're sorry, Austin, but you know, if you hear this, you can come on the podcast and tell us about North Texas and all the quarterback secrets. But yeah, so Austin led the team in passing after Fine went down again against Louisiana Tech, and Bean was, you know, yeah, so. So we really don't know exactly who's going to start this is not a situation where when Rice shifted from Wiley to Tom or Giovanni that the offense and the way they attacked kind of changed a little bit. Like North Texas is, it has like Fine's been beat up a lot this year, and they've not tempered their offense to anything sizably different when Bean's been in or somebody else. So you're going to see the same kind of style, and they're going to ask their quarterbacks to do the same kind of things. You might not have the big player, the downfield ability that Fine has when somebody else is in there, but this offense is still going to be pretty effective, and it's going to look the same. So Rice is going to prepare for Fine, and then if it's somebody else, they'll be okay.
Yeah, and I think the messaging from them, I know Glenn Hill over at the Chronicle tweeted an article from the Denton Record Chronicle, saying that the North Texas is saying right now that Fine is going to be okay for this one, is going to be ready to go. But you know, even if he is available, you know, assuming that he's totally through the concussion protocol and everything, which you know, hopefully they wouldn't be playing him if he weren't, but you've got to figure that as beat up as he has been this year, and you know, nobody 11 games in is at totally 100%, but as much as this guy's had to deal with, certainly you wouldn't expect him to be 100%, even if he is playing. So you know, I think right now you probably assume that he is going to be the guy, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and you know, I wish him the best, but I would be okay if he's not at 100% if he takes the field against Rice. And 50%.
Look after your health, Mason. You only get one body. You got to take care of it, man.
Oh man, and I will say so. If we're talking about, you know, this is football, small sample sizes, but senior day last year was Rice's only home conference win when they beat Old Dominion. And it was actually, you know, Juma Taviano and you know, Wiley Green started that game. It was the freshman that took over and won the day and really ran Old Dominion out of the house. I know that Bloomgren was really happy to get this win on the road against Middle, but you know, closing things out at home, their last game is on the road in the Sun Bowl at UTEP. So closing this one out and winning at home to end the year would be a pretty good springboard for the future. And we have national signing. Well, what the early signing period coming up in 4 weeks where Rice is going to close.
Which
in
is the actual national signing
day. The actual national signing day.
90% of something like 90% of prospects sign during the early signing period. So it functionally is the new signing day.
Yeah. So a couple wins down the stretch would be pretty big on that front. I think, well, I can say that Rice now, I'm expecting Rice to sign probably close to 2/3 of their 2020 guys. And then I think you're going to see Rice be pretty involved in the transfer portal. That's in February, I think, is really what we're going to see once people are out, a couple of grad guys come in. So there'll be more recruiting coverage, and we'll have that up on the site. So more things to follow. Like once the off season gets here, there is no off season. So there will be plenty of things to talk about. And you know, first things first, let's go out and get a win, hopefully over North Texas.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, anything else this week before we wrap up?
I think that's it.
All right. Well, we will see y'all next week. Hopefully, celebrating another win. And then it'll be the last week of the regular season, which,
wow,
sad and crazy that we're already, it always goes too fast.
I miss football.
Yeah. Right. Like I pre-miss it. I'm exactly. Gearing myself up to miss it. But yeah, we'll see y'all then. And, Rice fight.
This show was edited and produced by Carter Spires. It features music from Joseph McDade.